discover what is being done in her name, she will let us know it.
The doors flew open. Two men entered, one with a clumsy bandage on his chest, the other with one on his thigh.
Worm-eating, scum-lulling country guard let one of his new meats come in with a knife,
the man with the chest wound cried. Ramasu pointed them each to a bench. He took the chest wound, a shallow diagonal slice, and Aram the thigh wound, which had just missed an important vein.
And where is this new meat with the blade?
Ramasu asked, as he and Aram wet cloths and washed the injuries with a cleansing balm.
He won't be coming here,
the gladiator with the chest wound said offhandedly.
The lads settled his account.
Aram's mouth suddenly went dry. He thought he knew what the man meant. He glanced at Ramasu, who gave a tiny shake of his head. Fingers trembling, Aram got back to the work of spelling the veins and arteries whole again, then turned to the muscles that had been sliced.
Arm and torso work for you for 2 days,
Ramasu ordered Aram's patient when he was released.
No full-strength blows, no running. Tell the cooks plenty of meat. And you, weapons repair for 3 days, then light sparring for the rest of the week,
he said, pointing to his patient.
If your mentor has questions, he may see me. Off with you. I hear others on their way.
The afternoon continued in this manner. A broken jaw, cuts, lesser broken bones, head blows that resulted in 2 more sleeping gladiators in the infirmary. Things slowed down at last. Aram realized he hadn't heard the thwack of wooden blade against wooden blade for a while. They released their last patient when he woke shortly before the evening meal. The other patients had returned to their quarters earlier. Ramasu and Aram cleaned the infirmary, though Aram protested he could do so on his own.
Things are less formal here, Ramasu said gently. Today was actually fairly calm. There will be a few days while the gladiators torment the new meat, particularly those who are here only because they look strong or were troublesome to their former masters. They will not be killed if it can be helped. They are meant to die in the arena.
Aram made the sign against evil on his chest. Ramasu sighed.
Even so, but some will live, if we make them whole enough when they face the arena. When the gladiators tire of the new meat, they will turn to those who trained in lesser arenas, men and women who believe they are as good as the fighters of Thak City. I will need all of your strength then. So don't waste it in housekeeping. We share the labor here.
The room was clean, and the still room locked by the time a guard came to sit watch over the infirmary. 2 army slaves took charge of Ramasu's and Aram's belongings, with the exception of their mage work bags. Those remained with their owners. Together they crossed to the military side of the camp. Aram, to his shame, fell asleep at the table, to be woken and escorted to his room. Chapter 21. Summer Term 439. The Arena Training Camp. Ramasu woke him before dawn to a good-sized breakfast.
Eat, the master said, digging into his own meal. Now that we are here, they will cease to go easy on the fresh arrivals to the fighting force.
Aram tried to speak past the lump in his throat.
Easy? They went easy on those men?
Yes. Today the new warriors, who believe they are practiced, will learn that this arena is harder than they ever dreamed. As for the new meat,
Ramasu shook his head.
Let us hope they have enough native ability to survive their first 4 games. If they can do that, their chances are better than half that they will live past their first year.
Ramasu was not joking about the sudden quickening of business. The gladiator with a compound fracture was even drafted to soak cloths. Aram quickly showed him to teach those who could walk how to wash their injuries in water that was treated to clean out dirt and infection. Aram took charge of those with broken or cut arms and legs. Ramasu cared for those with more serious injuries. Preet scolded away from the work down on the floor, perched in the rafters and sang, her voice soothing the wounded. On their third day, Aram was smearing salve into a new man's sunburned back when a shadow fell over them.
If you don't mind, he asked the shadow's owner politely, I can't tell what I've gotten and what I'm missing.
The shadow moved. Aram finished the job and told the gladiator he had treated,
you'll be fine when you go to bed. You shouldn't burn like that again with the charm I gave you earlier.
Now, he said, looking for the shadow's owner, what may I do for— He recognized the large black man leaning against the wall nearby.
Musenda!
He cried, grinning and holding out his hands. The big man clasped them warmly.
It's wonderful to see you.
The gladiator smiled.
Good to see you. You've grown, haven't you?
Aram was shocked. He was now just half a head shorter than the gladiator.
I must have done so, though it was not my intention, he said as the patients close enough to hear chuckled. Now I see why the seamstresses keep complaining about lengthening my clothes.
Aram, you know this man.
Having finished with his patient, Ramasu came over to see who was talking to his student.
Mithras guard us all, Musenda, or may I still call you Sarge?
Musenda shook his head.
You can always call me Sarge, Master. It's the others I must remind. I've never been a soldier. Even the soldiers do it. Once they hear me speak out.
You mean screech, said a man with a sprained wrist. You mean bellow, added a woman with a broken rib.
However it is, Musenda said,
looking at the injured gladiators, his right eyebrow raised.
I can't make them stop, so I live with it.
How is your sister-in-law? How are the children?
Aram inquired. He motioned for the woman with the broken rib to sit up straight. She did so, wincing, and he cast the pain-killing spell for her. As Aram lay a wrapping of his power on her to see if she had more hurts, Musenda said,
My sister-in-law is well. She'll be pleased that you asked after her. I won't have the chance to see her much longer, though. They leave for Total next month.
Do you begrudge her?
Asked the female gladiator, as Aram gently placed his hands over the broken rib. Seeing her broken bone in his mind, he murmured the brief words of the spell to mend it, making sure that each splinter fit into its former place. Finished, he glanced at the woman and at Musenda.
Of course I don't begrudge her, Musenda replied. She is happy. A new husband is a good man. I'll miss them, though, and the little ones.
Tortal? Aram asked.
Why?
Her man works for horse dealers. They want to open a new branch there. They asked him to go. He's one of the best trainers they have.
Musenda shrugged.
They offered him a fine wage and a house of his own. I should have such luck.
Oh, remind me, I brought some toys for the children. Not much, just some little things,
Aram told the big man. To the woman he said, Meat, as much as you can eat, milk and cheese. She raised and lowered the arm on the side of the once broken rib.
Light work today and tomorrow, nothing with that arm. You should do well after that.
The woman smiled.
If you were but a few years older, I'd give you a proper thank you, she said, getting to her feet.
I'll wager those eyes are breaking the girl mage's hearts.
She kissed Aram on the cheek and left, cackling gleefully.
Don't be looking for no kiss from me, growled the man with the sprained ankle.
Aram blushed and tended to the gladiator's sprain. Later, when he returned from getting a drink of water, he found Ramasu speaking with Musenda. The infirmary was empty of patients, so he collapsed on a bench and relaxed among the cooling spells.
I had no idea that you two knew one another, or I would have sent word when we arrived,
the master was saying to the big gladiator.
We met at the games when he fell off the railing and nearly hit the sands,
Musenda explained. He grinned at Aram.
I'll wager anything you like that Ua will remember you. Elephants remember everything. She took him in her trunk, stood on her hind legs, and handed him up to his family, as pretty as you please,
he explained to Ramasu.
Aram, you are what?
Young, Aram muttered, blushing.
That's how Ua became the most popular elephant here,
Musenda told Ramasu.
They won't even make her fight anymore. She just marches in the parades and pats the children at the rail, and has little ones who become champions.
Aram's stomach cramped. It was wonderful to know that the glorious creature didn't risk her life in the battles now, but how could she stand giving her children up to the arena? He had worked often with Lintal's elephants, many of them too old or injured to fight, and the master had taught Aram everything he knew of the great creatures. They were more intelligent than most animals, and they had their own culture. Musenda looked at Aram.
Are you all right, lad?
Aram shook his head. I never understand why people are so happy to see humans and animals chopped up in the arena. Isn't life brutal enough? The waste is indecent. So is the joy the audience takes in the killing of innocent people. Thinking about the conversations he'd heard at school about the various gladiators, he added, mostly innocent people and innocent animals. It should be stopped.
Plenty of us would like that. Or we'd like it if contests were declared over before someone was killed,
Musenda said.
Time was. A fight to the death was rare. Not anymore. Our master emperor likes the sight of blood. So does his heir. That's to be expected, I suppose, being a general and all.
He shrugged.
And who cares? We are only slaves when all's said and done.
Valuable ones, Ramasu said.
Valuable? Not enough to let us live on a day nobles bet their gold on your opponent making a kill. Or when the crowd is crazed with bloodlust and the ruler of the games knows he'd best sacrifice some gladiators or there'll be a riot, like there was in 402.
Musenda smiled crookedly.
At least we got a new stadium out of that one.
A gladiator poked his head in the door.
Sarge! Shrike and Wild Dog are brawling again!
Musenda sighed.
If anyone dies in these games, I pick those two. Good to talk with you both. I'll come for the toys later, and my thanks.
He left at a fast trot. As the days passed, Musenda, Sarge, became a regular visitor, whether he came with injured fighters or on his own. Aram often found Ramasu and the gladiator in conversation, walking around the exercise yard during quiet periods. Those came more frequently in the second week, when the newest gladiators had learned something, and those from lesser arenas had been taught respect for their place in this one. As they learned, so did Aram. He also listened. Most told him how they became gladiators. One woman, Quomat, broke Aram's heart. She'd been married at 10, a practice among many of the empire's tribes. After several miscarriages before she was 14, her village healer declared her barren. Her husband sold her to pay the bride price for his new wife.
"A merchant bought me. I was fine at his house at first," she told Aram as he worked on a deep cut in her left thigh.
Across her golden brown stomach, left bare by the brief shirt that was part of her practice gear, was the tattoo, "Not for you."
"They hardly beat anyone, and I could do any chore they gave me," she said. "The meals was good. Then I started to grow, up top and my bum. The men, not just slaves, they fought over me. Mistress decided I was too much trouble and sold me. The master of fighters at the local arena saw me on the block, and here I am."
Aram finished and gave his usual care instructions.
"Would you leave if you could, Quilmat?" he asked, curious.
She had a scar from her right temple across the bridge of her nose, and she had lost a breast to the gods of battle. She slid off the table and stood, wincing as she put weight on the healed leg.
"Sunny, maybe you're trying to trick me, or maybe you're just green, but what you asked can get a girl killed. I'm a slave. I don't have choices. Only owners."
She patted his cheek with a brown hand knotted from years of wielding sword and spear.
"I'll give you credit and say you're green. There are worse ways to live than this. Like being pounded by an old man when you're only 10.
She was barely out the door when two more patients came in. Aram turned away to scrub a tear from his eye before he settled them. Not all tales were sad. Three men sold themselves to the arena for the glory, they said. Aram didn't understand. A 6-year veteran of the games was a soldier who had killed a fellow soldier. He'd been given a choice of death or the arena. One female gladiator, Gueda, came from a tribe where women and men alike were fighters. She had been caught by enemies and sold to the arena, where she liked the life.
"I'm one of 4 women as'll take on a man," she told Aram as he cleaned and mended claw marks in her side.
She cackled gleefully, causing him to make a puzzled noise. She explained,
"Of course, I do me on fighting with a trained tiger at me side, against 3 to 5 gladiators."
"It seems to me working with a tiger is as dangerous as fighting against a man," Aram murmured, touching the skin next to her longest wound. His gift spilled into it.
"Takuma was just thirsty this morning," Gueda explained, twisting to watch Aram work. "I've told them and told them. Don't give him mutton. It makes him mean. But do they listen? I'm only the handler. Mayhap next time I'll feed a sheep to Takuma, aye? I'll turn him loose in the shed when they fix the cat's meals. See if the butchers like Takuma when his belly aches. Me poor big boy."
"That seems ill-advised," Aram said absently, using the spell to bind each layer of skin and muscle evenly. Her poor big boy had cut all the way down to her ribs.
"I suppose you're right. Bad to give him a taste for human. They're ruined if that happens."
She fell silent, only to stiffen a few moments later.
"What's that noise?"
During her silence, Aram sealed her wounds. Now he placed a cream on the welts to fight infection.
"What noise?" he asked.
A distant roar reached his ears.
"Lady of the cats, that's Takuma. Are you near done?"
She rose to her knees.
"If they handle him when I'm not there, they'll get more than a scratch."
"Give me a moment and listen to me," Aram said, trying not to be impatient. Realizing that she was not listening, he wrote instructions on a sheet from his workbook and ordered her to wait. He rushed into the still room to put up a jar of infection-fighting ointment, since she was plainly the last person who would go easy on her wounds. When he returned, he saw that she had taken a light tunic kept for those who wore shirts and had it half over her head. The moment she was dressed, she swiped the ointment from Aram's hand, glanced at the instructions, and kissed his cheek.
"Nice work, youngster,"
Gaweda said with a grin.
"If you ever visit with your girl, tell the guards I said you could come see me and Takuma, no charge."
The afternoon was filled with lighter injuries than Gaweda's. Other visitors assured Aram that Takuma quieted down once his human had come into view, before he could do serious damage to those who had fed him mutton. Gaweda herself brought her cat around to meet Aram and Ramasu after the noon meal, before the animal settled for his afternoon nap. Both healers acknowledged the cat's splendor. Ramasu at a somewhat greater distance than Aram.
"But I thought you liked cats,"
Aram teased his master gently after Gaweda and her companion had left. Ramasu lifted his eyebrow.
"If you like him, you may play with him. I will keep the kind of distance that shows so large a creature proper respect. Perhaps even a little more distance, so there are no misunderstandings."
Aram grinned and turned to greet their next patient, a cook with a burned hand. As things quieted near the supper hour, Ramasu left him in charge and went to take a nap. Preet chose the same time to fly outside. Aram cleaned the infirmary, then sat out front, chin in hand. Gaweda's mention of his girl that morning had stayed with him. He missed Faris more than he had thought he would. Her laugh, her teasing, her perfumes, her touch on his shoulder when she wanted to say something personal. He missed her and Ozorn and his masters. He missed the university gardens and the quiet libraries, the breezes that blew cool over the fountains, and the comfort of his room. He knew he would see his friends soon, but in the time between, the day of the games loomed like a thousand years. He was occupying himself by rolling fresh bandages when a shadow fell over his work. He looked up. A burly gladiator stood in the open doorway.
"Where's the master?"
he demanded. "Out until after supper, but what is the problem? I am able to handle most injuries," Aram replied. The gladiator snorted.
"You? You're not but a pup."
Aram straightened.
"I was healer enough to look after Gueda's wounds," he retorted.
The man snorted a second time and walked farther into the infirmary, drifting around as he surveyed the contents of the countertops. His eyes flicked too often toward the still room.
"What kind of injury do you have?" Aram asked. "Or is a friend the injured one?"
The stranger made him uneasy.
"What's in there?"
the man asked, pointing his thumb at the still room.
"Nothing of interest to you," Aram said, frowning.
Was this fellow trying to find the more serious medicines?
"And the room is locked."
"But you have a key."
The gladiator looked him over, sizing him up.
"I do not."
It was a lie. Aram knew the spells that would open the room. Now he really disliked this man.
"Unless you are hurt or seriously ill, I must ask you to leave."
He moved until he stood directly in front of the still room door. He fumbled for a protection spell that would be just enough to send this man on his way. He was terrified that he would use the wrong thing.
"I have a headache."
The man took a few steps toward Aram, a smile on his mouth. Aram recognized the expression in his eyes. It was contempt, something he knew all too well from school.
"Give me something for it,"
the gladiator ordered.
"Your training chiefs have headache medications," Aram replied. Ramasu had explained that on the first day.
"But I want healing from you, boy."
The man shook his arms out in front of him, as boxers and masters of unarmed combat did. He clenched his fists, making the joints crackle. His muscles bulged. Aurum called a ball of glittering black fire to his hand.
"Go to your training master, please," he said calmly, glaring, "before I help you outside."
"Gotran, what are you doing here?"
Musenda walked in.
"The practice chief is looking for you."
"I have a headache,"
the other gladiator snapped as Aurum slowly absorbed his gift. Gotran added,
"And this piece of arena bait."
Musenda cut him off.
"You'll have it worse when the practice chief gets his hands on you. Besides, you know the chiefs carry what's needful for the usual things."
Gotran glared at Aurum.
"You'll regret this,"
he said, his voice so quiet only Aurum would hear. He walked out, passing too close to Musenda for politeness. Aurum watched him go.
"What was he really after, youngster?"
Musenda asked.
"You are standing by the room with the serious medicines."
"We had only reached the headache area of our conversation," Aurum explained.
He silently cursed the bone-deep school tradition of never reporting bad behavior to instructors. Besides, the way days in the camp went, he might never have to deal with Gotran again. Musenda slapped the doorpost casually.
"Well, if he bothers you, let Ramasu or me know. Why don't you lock up and go get something to eat?"
"I'll do that as soon as I've finished my chores,"
Aurum assured the older man.
"Thank you.
Oh, and wait!"
He ran into the still room and retrieved the sack with the toys he had gotten from Musenda's family.
"They aren't much, but I thought the children would like them,"
he explained as he gave the sack to the gladiator. Musenda looked at the little doll, the lion, and the gorilla, all with moving wooden limbs.
"You're a good-hearted fellow," he said gruffly. "If I can ever do anything for you..."
Aurum started to shake his head, then thought again. He grinned.
"As a matter of fact, a close friend of mine thinks you are the best gladiator who ever lived," he said. "She would love a favor of yours."
Once Musenda was gone, Aurum shut the door and locked it. Relieved, he sat on a bench and wiped his sweaty forehead on his sleeve. This thing with Gotran was more like what he'd expected when he first arrived and hadn't seen until today.
"That was wrong of me," he thought shakily, "treating him like trouble. What if he was truly ill? I will have failed him."
He didn't act ill, his common sense told him. He acted like a bully or a thief. Aurum answered him as he would have answered a bully. "If I don't take it from the likes of Tristan or Diop, why would I take it from him?"
Aurum considered telling Ramasu, but changed his mind. It wasn't necessary. Musenda had handled Gotran. And Aurum didn't want to confess that he'd been about to strike a non-mage with his gift. Still a little shaky, Aurum left the infirmary, then checked and double-checked the locking spells on the windows and doors in case Gotran returned to break in. Only then did he go to supper. Soon enough he would be gone, never to return if he had his say. Let another bully clash with Gotran, someone who was allowed to teach him a lesson.
"Don't waste time easing mild injuries,"
Ramasu told Aurum the afternoon before the games. The fighters had the day to themselves, so they had no patience. Instead, they readied the supplies they would use the next day.
"You'll need your strength for the big ones. Treat them enough to keep them alive for a day, until we can tend their injuries properly. We will have many fighters with wounds that will kill them if we don't keep them alive. Pass the ones whose hurts you are unsure of to Dalaric."
The gladiator's usual healer had returned to his cottage on the arena road that afternoon. He had brought three more healers with him, two men and a woman, who would help on the day of the games and the days after. Aram stopped packing a box full of jars of ointments and cloths.
Unsure?
Unsure whether their injuries truly require healing or whether they are simply trying to get out of the next battle.
Ramasu put an armload of jars into another box and set them in order.
Some new people will pretend they are worse off than they are, particularly since you are new. Don't let them do it. If they're caught by the commander of the arena, they'll be hanged off the side of the arena at tomorrow's sunrise.
Death by hanging has to be more merciful than the games,
Aram commented as he hammered a lid onto his box.
They aren't hanged by the neck. They're hanged by the wrists and left to rot. The arena is kinder.
Ramasu rested a hand on Aram's shoulder.
I'll have a nausea potion for you in the morning, and a sleeping potion tonight, for both of us. Understand, if you served on a battlefield, it would be far worse. There are so many more killed or wounded. This is the closest to a battlefield I can bring you at present.
Aram began to place bandages in a fresh box.
Why? Why is it needful?
Why was the typhoid hospital needful, or any other plague or surgery I've brought you to? A mage with healing skills must be ready for such things. This is how we repay the gods for our gifts.
Aram nodded, though the thought of working on a battlefield, particularly after the busier days here, made him dizzy. He was dreading the new day so much he had refused his noon meal.
I knew nothing of desperate sick rooms with more than one person to tend when I was your age,
Ramasu said as they worked.
I was to be a priest of Mithros and rise high in my duke's service. My marriage to a daughter of his grace's house had been arranged since we were children. I was 15 when my gift blossomed. Within a year I had been disowned and driven from my city. My father's parting purse in my hand, and my mother's curse in my ears. I had managed to destroy half of the god's temple.
Aram stared at his master in awe.
Mithros's temple?
Ramasu began to chuckle. He poured a cup of tea for each of them.
Great Mithros appeared in all his glory over the ruins, picked up his altarpiece, which was untouched, and carried it to his preferred location for a new temple. So the god saved my life, but little else. To preserve their name and fortune, my family exiled me. I had only wanted to show the Duke what I could do.
He gave a cup to Aram, who cooled it with a sign he had devised to take the worst heat from food and hot drinks.
Surely you had a teacher, he said quietly.
My teacher at home taught clever spells and charms to young nobles,
Ramasu replied.
He was no more ready for me than I was for my gift. I spent a few years wandering the empire, always working my way toward the university, but stopping to study with anyone who would teach me.
He smiled and looked at the palm of one hand.
I chopped a great deal of wood and vegetables after my coin ran out. For the most part, I learned from goody wives and hedge witches. Proper mages had no interest in a scruffy fellow like me. Horse doctors, they would teach me, but not proper healers. Do me proud when you go out in the world, Aram.
I will, Master Ramasu, Aram said.
His heart burned at the thought of his gentle, if aloof, master being treated like a beggar on the road. They finished their tea and returned to packing. When they were done, Ramasu stayed in the infirmary, making entries in his supply records. Aram ambled out into the practice grounds and, with the help of a couple of coins, persuaded the ever-watchful guards to let him go into the menagerie, where the fighting animals were kept. The head keeper warned him to stay away from the cages if he didn't want to lose a hand, then motioned for him to go ahead after Aram handed over more coins. Nearly everyone knew him by now, and assumed that, however young he might be, a mage who could sew up a man's bum could be trusted not to tease a fighter elephant. The people who worked with the animals either napped close by or had retreated to their rooms out of the sun. Aram was left to himself to admire and feel sorry for the great cats, including the famous Takuma, rare wolves and hyenas, ostriches, elephants, giraffes, and zebras. The thought of them being ripped apart by gladiators and other animals broke his heart. He prayed for them to the goddess as maiden and to the black god, asking that these torn and scarred veterans of the games be given rest in the peaceful realms. He was taking a shortcut to an outer gate when he heard a familiar voice.
"You'll keep your word, then, and this will be but a taste."
The words were followed by the soft clink of coins.
"I know what I'm doing, master."
Aram dimly knew that voice, too. He crept to the edge of the building that concealed him and peered around it, promising himself that he would start carrying a scrying mirror. The shorter man's back was to him, but Aram was very familiar with the heavily embroidered bronze wrap and the sandals heavy with topaz stones. He had seen Chiyoke wear both time and time again. The other man was the gladiator Katrin, who had made him feel so uncomfortable. Now he grinned at Chiyoke.
"You'll get the victory you want."
Aram stepped back, soundless. If they were setting up a crooked fight, he wanted nothing to do with it. Wasn't it bad enough when the fights were straightforward? He wondered what Ozorn would say if he knew his master was involved in cheating at the games. Chiyoke was at supper that night, joking with the camp's captain and the healers. He even got Ramasu to smile slightly, claiming he had done his bit by bringing more supplies.
"I would do more," he offered with a wicked grin.
"God save us, no," exclaimed Dalaric. "The last time you tried to help with the wounded, we had to treat you for a broken arm."
"I didn't know that fellow spoke common," Chiyoke protested.
"People really like him," Aram told Ramasu as they headed to their rooms. "Master Chiyoke."
"He makes himself likable,"
Ramasu replied, yawning. Then he said quietly,
"Until he isn't. Remember that. And he doesn't like to share anything."
Aram nodded. It was good to hear his own suspicions confirmed. They woke and dressed at dawn while their guardian brought around their cart. Six men escorted them through the gate into the gladiator's compound, while Preet grumbled drowsily to herself. He had tried to get her to stay behind, but no matter where he put her, she had turned up on his shoulder, or, more annoyingly, clinging to his hair until he surrendered. He kept her in his lap as he looked around him at the gladiator's home. He had never been allowed beyond the infirmary. Now he was disappointed. All he could see looked the same as the guards' camp. There were plenty of open ground for practices, barracks for the gladiators, practice dummies and targets, and empty barrels.
"For the practice weapons,"
Ramasu murmured. He had noticed the direction of Aram's gaze.
"The guards take them in at night. The gladiators can do a great deal of damage, even with blunt wood."
Aram nodded. He had spent days patching up samples of that damage. He was denied even a glimpse of the stables or the cages where the wild beasts were held, because a fog had rolled in overnight. It masked all but the closest barracks and hung like a curtain of shadows over the looming arena. Two soldiers rode ahead to unlock the chains that held the gate closed. Then Ramasu raised a hand and murmured a few words. Slowly, one half of the gate swung outward. Ramasu drove the cart into the tunnel through the arena. Although the broad road was packed dirt, their cart still sent up echoes. So did the slam of the gate as the soldiers closed it behind them. They were alone in the torchlit vastness of the sleeping arena, under the many rows of seats.
"The guards will return with Dalaric and his people," Ramasu said quietly. "I like to be set up and have time to read and meditate before the noise gets bad. Which reminds me."
As the cart cast echoes from the tunnel's roof and sides, he reached into the pocket of the cheap light robe he was wearing, a duplicate of the one he had given to Aram for the day. From it, he drew a small packet.
"You'll want these. Don't worry about leaving them in. You'll be able to hear those close to you perfectly well. They'll be shouting as it is."
Aram opened the packet to discover three pairs of wax earplugs. He smiled.
"Thank you. These will help, and I'd forgotten. Varys had some for me the last time I had to go to the games."
"She's a clever lady," Ramasu said. "Devoted to you and Ozorn, I understand."
"Well, to Ozorn,"
Aram said, looking at Preet. He touched the warmth that was Varys's charm. It was the only thing he carried in his belt pouch today.
"No, I am fairly certain she is devoted to both of you, in different ways,"
Ramasu commented.
"Of course, it would be a waste if any of the three of you were to marry at so early a stage in your careers."
The word was like a hot poker in Aram's ear.
"Marry?"
he yelped, his voice echoing through the tunnel.
"No, sir, no. None of us are thinking, well, Ozorn's mother has brought it up for him, but he doesn't want to yet, nor do Varys and I. We haven't even gotten certificates, and we all want to be masters of one sort or another."
Ramasu glanced sideways at him.
"In the world outside the university, many people are married by now, remember, and starting families. There's no shame in it."
Aram shook his head.
"But there's so much more to learn. I know I'm supposed to be advanced, but I look at what my masters can do and what is in the books, and I realize I've hardly begun to learn my craft."
"I see. Forgive me. You're at an age when many students discover that love, or their families, marital alliances, are stronger than their studies."
Ramasu drew the wagon up. They had reached the gates on the other side of the tunnel. To their right were cells, large ones barred with iron. To their left was a single great opening, closed by heavy wooden doors and locked. Ramasu dismounted and touched a finger to the left-hand lock. It fell open. He pressed one hand to each half of the door. Both sides swung inward, revealing a shadowed interior. Returning to the cart and picking up a box, he asked Aram,
"Would you do the lamps inside? Only those overhead, not the wall or ground ones."
Aram gulped, then reached into the room with his power. To his great relief, the overhead lamps were huge metal braziers held in baskets of chains. Their contents were not charcoal, but wax studded with a multitude of wicks. He didn't have to manage a tiny light, but a small wave of flame that swept along the braziers until all were lit.
"Very good," Ramasu said with approval. "A finely tuned use of your gift. Now, let's unpack."
In stowing boxes on shelves along the far wall, Aram learned the room. There were 20 stone tables there, all with gutters in each side like a butcher's table. Aram gulped. These would carry away blood. There were new tall leather buckets at one end of each table, he assumed for trash.
"20?"
he asked, his voice cracking.
Usually needed only when the Emperor wants a great battle, or a blood feud has sprung up among the gladiators,
Ramasu said.
Once we're done stocking the wall shelves, we will put surgical supplies and burn treatments on the shelves underneath the first 10 tables from the door.
Aram nodded. The healer would be able to reach what was needed easily, at least at first.
Dalaric is responsible for hiring and training runners,
Ramasu explained.
They will restock when they see you are low on supplies. If you need something, hold up your hand and a runner will come for your orders. They will also fetch us water or tea, or even something to eat during rests.
Aram couldn't envision any time this day when he would want to eat.
The bucket for discarded clothes, pieces of weapons, and so on is also useful for vomiting,
Ramasu said gently.
I know this will be hard, Aram. Do not be heroic. I have often done this on my own with Dalaric's people. Sometimes I work here with two mastery students.
Two mastery students, Aram cried, as close to hysterics as he had ever been in his life. Then why not at least bring another instead of using only me? Ramasu raised his eyebrows until Aram caught his breath. Then he said, his voice kind and firm,
because I knew you would be enough.
Later, as they listened to the clatter that heralded the approach of Dalaric and his companions in the tunnel, Ramasu cast a shielding spell around them and murmured in Aram's ear,
mind what you say. There are listening spells here as well as the camp. And, son, if you have mercy for these people, once they've taken a sufficiently bad injury, don't heal them completely. They will have to go back into the arena today if you do. Unless, of course, they demand to return. The others can finish their healing tomorrow or the next day.
Return to the games? Aram whispered, horrified.
Some do. Hikaja only asks that we heal them, not that we tell them what to do with their bodies,
the master replied. He touched his fingers to his lips and to his forehead in salute to the goddess of healing. Aram did the same. He had noticed the goddess's image over the door to the tunnel. Someone had given her a fresh dressing of vivid paints, clearly an act of worship. Without thinking, his magic quick to his hand after days of constant use, Aram called up two small balls of light and sent them gliding to the figure. He silently asked the goddess to accept his gift. The balls hung in the air for a moment. Then each moved to one of the figure's outstretched hands and remained, as if she herself worked healing magic in the room.
Very well done,
Ramasu said, resting a hand on Aram's shoulder with approval.
I did my worship this morning. I have to say, I would not have thought of this, but I will from now on. It will give heart to all who see it. Now, let's try to get something to stay in your belly, if only for a little while.
Chapter 22 Aram would remember that day as a giant stinking roar in hot darkness, one where hands clutched his arms and hands and, once, his throat. Despite the wax plugs, his ears filled with the screams of the wounded and the dying. They were carried into the room on stretchers by soldiers or gladiators, sometimes by the very gladiators who had been trying to kill them a moment before. They were slung onto a freshly cleaned table, where the next free healer looked at them and judged whether to take this one himself or herself, or to refer the case to Dalaric or Ramasu. He vomited into the bucket more than once. The wounded called on their gods, mothers, lovers. They cursed the Emperor, and no one hushed them. Not there. They begged for death and screamed for life. he learned the truth of what he'd been told, that newcomers were hurt first. And not only the newcomers. Quomat, who had been married at 10 and fought for years, died just as she reached his table. Aurum growled and reached deep into his gift, thinking to go after her spirit and bring it back. He couldn't lose her to the Black God without so much as a fight. Then Preet was on his head, pecking, having dropped from her perch on the candle holders above. Aurum shook his head to dislodge her and put his hands on the woman's chest. Suddenly, copper fire slid under his palms, coating her entire body to shield her from him. Aurum glared up into Ramasu's face. 3 of his patients had died so far. He would not surrender another.
"She has passed into the peaceful realms," Ramasu told him, his eyes steady. "Will you deny her that? Look at her scars. Look inside at her muscles. How many are nicked and shortened by swords? This isn't life, Aurum. Let her go."
So he looked and wept at the ragged mess that battles had made of a good, strong body.
"Black God bear you up and give you peace, Quomat," he whispered.
"Got wound here!"
someone shouted. Ramasu left. Aurum turned Quomat's remains over to the handlers and went to the next clear table. Someone told him there was time enough to catch their wind. The next event was a chariot race of 20 laps, 12 for the goddess in her 3 aspects, 4 for Mithros, and 4 for the graveyard hag. Once the tables were cleared, they could eat if they wished. Their wish was not granted. 3 chariots crashed on the 5th lap, causing crashes in later laps as the drivers struggled to avoid the mess. 1 driver died on the spot, a helper told Aurum. 2 more came to the hall. 1 for Ramasu and 1 for Aurum. His had a smashed collarbone and left arm, as well as a broken leg and hip.
"I'll take the leg and the arm, if you'll take the collarbone and hip."
Dalaric had come to stand at the other end of the table.
"I don't have the power you do to heal complicated bones that are smashed, but I can do these easy."
Aurum looked at the older mage with gratitude.
"Thank you, sir. That would be good."
Dalaric nodded.
"I'll do leg first, then arm. We'll switch places then."
It was strange feeling another's gift run along veins and bones next to his, but it gave him confidence to pull the pieces of collarbone back into their original positions. He plunged into the painstaking work, shifting swollen muscle and veins into place, until he realized Dalaric was pounding on his shoulder.
"What you have is good enough," the man shouted over the racket. "Splint it and finish the work tomorrow or the day after. Get the hip the same way. We have the rest of the race, the beast fights and the prize matches yet. Save your strength."
About to protest, Aurum closed his mouth. Dalaric was far more experienced at this. He nodded and moved down to his patient's broken hip, while Dalaric summoned one of his people with a splint. There were more casualties of the chariot race. Apparently, that was the point of such things. The faces of the wounded blurred. Ramasu made him stop to rest when there was a lull, and Preet came to sing to him. Other healers and their assistants who were free gathered around to listen. It was a moment of quiet that ended too soon. The beast matches had begun, leading with the executions of criminals before the fighting. A few warriors came in, all cared for by other healers than Aurum and Ramasu. They were restoring the supplies under the table when another fighter was brought in.
"I want Aurum!" she shouted in a fury. "Aurum, you rhino bums! You globs of elephant dung!"
"Here!"
Aurum called. He went to his position and waited, hands shaking. Should he have asked Ramasu to help him with someone obviously arena-crazed, as they called it? 4 workers carried over a woman on a stretcher and eased her onto Aurum's table. She was covered in blood, with a large stab wound in her side a smaller one across one forearm, and a large one in her thigh. Aram had discovered there were no niceties here. A helper poured a bucket of water over the gladiator carefully to wash away blood and sweat. It also washed sand into the wounds, but that was a problem for the healer to handle. Aram had changed a rock-moving spell he knew to cover tiny rocks. That cleared the wounds out nicely. Only then did he look at the panting gladiator.
"Gueda?"
he whispered, horrified. He had not wanted to see another familiar face on his table. She seized his wrist with her good hand. Tears streamed from her eyes.
"They killed my beautiful Dekuma," she croaked. "My cat! My only friend! They killed him!"
She turned toward Aram and sobbed. For a moment he held her as if she were Varys. Then he whispered,
"I'm going to help you sleep, so I can do my work better. Is that all right?"
She nodded. He said,
"I am so sorry. I know you were devoted to each other."
He eased her into slumber to help her escape heartbreak as much as to ease her body's pain.
"Very kind."
Lucenda, glorious in bronzed chest and leg armor, wearing a short sword and carrying a helmet, had come to the side of the table.
"I saw the match. They thought she'd be useless without Dekuma. Others have tried it, but these succeeded in killing the cat at least. I know she talked to the keepers about Dekuma maybe not seeing so well in his left eye, and that's where they got him."
"What happened to them?" Aram asked. He gently put Gueda flat on the table and let his gift flow over her to see if he had noted all of her wounds. Lucenda smiled thinly.
"They are dead. She went berserk when they killed her cat."
He bent and kissed Gueda on the forehead.
"Heal, sword sister," he whispered.
"Sarge!"
someone bellowed.
"Time."
Musenda, Sarge, sighed as he straightened.
"We'll see if the Emperor or Prince Mikram feels merciful."
Aram looked up. "Prince Mikram?"
"Oh, we are graced with the presence today," Musenda replied. "His Imperial Highness is here for a rest, if you can believe that. His Majesty wants to show him off."
Aram knew better than to wish the big man luck. Gladiators thought that wishing someone good luck before a fight was like a curse. Instead, he said,
"You look very threatening."
It was good to hear Sarge laugh as he walked off. There were fewer fights now, as the popular individual warriors engaged in battles on the sands. It gave Aram unwanted time to think after he finished with Gueda.
"Ozorn is there, I'll wager. And Varys," he thought.
"If Mikram is present in a ceremonial way, they'll be in attendance along with the princess. And in the normal manner of things, I'd be up there with them." He looked around. Helpers washed down the stone tables. Ramasu talked with Dalaric as they ate. All the wounded who were bandaged and waiting for more healing the next day had been carried into a room next to this one. They wouldn't hear the screams of those freshly cut or dying.
"They think of everything here," Aram said bitterly.
A nearby healer didn't appear to notice his sour tone.
"They've had centuries to smooth away the wrinkles," she replied.
They both heard the approach of someone screeching in agony.
"My turn," the woman said.
She touched Aram on the shoulder.
"Get Ramasu to bring you back soon. Everyone appreciates your work."
She reached a bare table just as men carried in a huge gladiator. He was from the icy lands far to the north by his coloring. Someone had dislocated one of the man's shoulders and broken both of his legs. Immediately, another healer joined the woman to assist her with the damage. Aram had been talking for a little while with Ramasu, Dalaric, and some of Dalaric's healers, when a slow, rhythmic booming filled the tunnel and the room. Many of the others ran to the door to see what was going on.